You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Well, welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada. I typically do an introduction at this point, but I'm going to tell a little story. During COVID, I think many people discovered different hobbies, different vices, whether it was discovering the baking of sourdough, or it was drinking, or certain exercise techniques, whatever it was to get you through the days at home. Well, my family, having four kids and being at home for a long time and not always wanting to watch kids shows, I discovered a show, thanks to a friend of mine, called The Great British Baking Show. And I fell in love. And it was those moments when they would pause and have tea. It was all the different accents from all over the different kind of areas of Britain. And then, it was on the CBC Gem app, which is where we also discovered Schitt's Creek, which I think then went over to Netflix and kind of really took off. But I then realized that there was no more episodes left. But then my friend said, hey, there's the Great Canadian Baking Show, which again, the first two or three seasons, was Dan Levy was one of the hosts. And so I discovered the show, and it was in this season, one of the seasons, I discovered Colin. And Colin was this incredible, one of the competitors. He sang at sometimes. He had fun. He was so kind to all the other, fellow competitors. And he was a great baker amongst all those incredible traits. So Colin is with us today. All that to say, I really appreciate you being here today, Colin.
Oh, thanks for that introductory story. That's so sweet. And thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here with you. And, I think Canada and the world really rediscovered their kitchens during the pandemic, and specifically baking, and more specifically sourdough. And I always like to say that sourdough is the other pandemic that we're still kind of dealing with. And who knows when that'll end? Hopefully never, because bread is love.
Yes. You know what? During all the seasons, both British and Canadian, you never had a baked sourdough bread, did you? I've never seen that.
Yeah, sure. Because like sourdough would take like sometimes days to make. And so you'll find like on the shows, like they really have to, tailor the challenges to those unique time constraints. And it's like they really create magic and they curate a really wide variety of recipes. But of course, those days long recipes have to stay on the shelf.
Yeah. And so season three, runner up, you made it to the final, few that were right there, which was incredible. And the show can now be found not just on CBC Gem, for those that have that app, but also on Netflix, which is pretty
great.
That's
right. We're on Netflix Canada. I believe we're also on Amazon Prime Video. So some other streaming services that are a little lesser known, but we're out there in the world. And it's really, really cool. And it's so interesting to see how the viewership shifts, because on CBC and CBC Gem, unfortunately, it's a bit of a niche audience. Not everybody knows that CBC Gem is free to Canadians. It has amazing programming. But as soon as we hit Netflix, because that is, the streaming service on everybody's minds, viewership really skyrocketed. And all of us competitors and alumni of the show found like completely new audiences. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. And I think that's a similar echo to when Dan Levy would talk about the success of Schitt's Creek. Like, it was on CBC Gem. And I remember telling friends about it, and they're like, what, Gem? I don't know this Gem thing. I don't want to download another app. But then the minute Netflix took it on, the world discovered, the glorious, what do we call it? What was his store called again that he owned?
Roses and Sons?
Rose Apothecary.
That's what it was. Yes.
But okay, your background, what you're doing now, you do marketing as a day job. So you got to take some time out from the Retail Council of Canada to go on the show. And how long were you off for? How long did you need to be? Or was it just weekends?
You do have to go away for a full chunk for the Canadian show.
Okay.
On the British franchise, on the British series, they really do film on weekends because, the UK is a smaller place geographically. But in Canada, we got people from Newfoundland, we got people from PEI, we got people from Vancouver. So we film in pretty much one fell swoop with days off, obviously. Yeah. I had to take, I think it was something like 6 or 7 weeks off of work.
Wow.
It was pretty wild. And what was kind of funny about my situation was I don't think normally I would have been able to take that much time off of work, but I was actually transitioning from one role to another.
Okay.
So I was just rejoining Retail Council of Canada, where I'm currently the marketing manager. And I had worked there previously in the years 2014 through 2016. And upon my return, I said, listen, I would love to return, but I have this other project that I just signed on to. But because of NDAs, I couldn't say what it was. All I could say was that I'm working on a project with CBC. And Retail Council was like, okay, I guess we'll see you in 6 weeks, question mark? And I was like, yes, it might be sooner though. And they were even more confused. They're like, what do you mean it might be sooner?
Oh, because it might be sooner. Yes, of course, of course. So they're like, are you going on an adventure with David Suzuki to discover the nature of things? Or like, what CBC is it?
Yeah, exactly. I remember telling my boss, like, because again, I couldn't divulge many details. I just said, if I come back sooner, I will be sad. And she was like, okay, so I guess I'll hope to see you in 6 weeks and not sooner.
Yeah.
I'm like, yep, that's exactly it. And then once the season had wrapped, we waited a few months and then they announced us and we were able to go public. And everyone in my office was like, oh, that's where you were. That's really random.
Wow. Now, did you do live viewing parties or how was the experience for you to watch your season?
It was very strange. It's very weird to watch yourself on television.
And what cuts did they do? Did they make you look good? Were you like, and typically everyone on that show is pretty kind and warm-hearted. And
I think the editors and the story producers are really generous to all the competitors. So even when you look quote unquote bad to yourself, they make us all look and sound amazing. Yeah. So I was really happy with the edit. The only thing that I was surprised to see missing was how many times I cried. I cried, I think, every episode, except, like, maybe there might have been two episodes where I didn't cry, but I was such an emotional mess because, I mean, for a lot of different reasons. So that's one thing that was missing, so some behind the scenes tea. But yeah, it was really interesting watching myself. I found I learned a lot about myself. I think I'm a pretty self-aware human, but I don't think, you know, it's a unique experience watching yourself in various states of stress and how your, you know, face and body react to those pressures. So it was so interesting. I'm like, oh, wow, that's my stressed face. Or that's how my voice changes when I'm in a state of turmoil. I make it sound like I went through war, but it really was fun. I promise.
That's very incredible. Exciting. That's incredible. And yeah, and you see those like Myers-Briggs and Enneagrams or whatever, Berkmans that tell you where you go when you're stressed in a work environment, but you got to physically watch yourself recorded forever in time how you physically, emotionally react when you're stressed. That's incredible in a very pressure situation. So, okay, being in retail and the marketing of, you know, Retail Council of Canada, and then watching the show, I notice, and sometimes I watch shows and I see fun product placements, right? Like, oh, there's a Ford truck or there's a, you know, Nissan Versa, right, and Heroes. But I notice on the Great Canadian Baking Show, everything is blank. It's all these, like, containers, but then Robin Hood flour. Tell me about that. Yes.
Yes. So the show is, you know, very graciously sponsored by Robin Hood flour. And or Smucker's, which is a company that the umbrella company behind Robin Hood.
Would that be Smucker's Jam as well?
Yeah, Smucker's Jam. Okay. Robin Hood flour. What else do they have? Eagle Brand sweetened condensed milk.
Okay.
And Carnation evaporated milk. I think those are all the.
So those are you'll see in real life. Although you never use real jam because you always make jam in the
exactly.
show.
Exactly.
Okay.
We're on season one, you'll notice that bakers are using jam. They're using Smucker's Jam because it's a sponsor. And there was such a strong viewer response to that, a negative one, that I think that's why they shifted away from that. Because, you know, the sponsors, they want their products out there. And that's, you know, that's what they're paying for. That's what the agreement is all about. And that totally makes sense. But from a viewer standpoint, we want to see bakers bake. We want to see bakers make things from scratch. So whenever possible, they do that now. So hence the lack of Smucker's Jam now.
Okay. But Robin, but tell me about the relationship, like what it was like. To, you know, did you have to put the bag a certain way? And then tell me what it's been like with that relationship since the show.
Yeah. So Robin Hood, I mean, they have a whole team, a whole culinary team and a culinary sponsorship team that deals with the product placement. So, you know, those are just the bags and the packages. You know, I'm looking over here because I have a few bags of Robin Hood flour right now. It's like I'm on the show right now. But, you know, they will cover up the labels of the products that are not sponsored, yes, or products that might be competing with the sponsor. And then, you know, the products that are sponsors, they just have them out in plain view. Sometimes you'll have a producer come by and be like, Colin, I'm just going to move this bag just so we can see the label, but keep doing what you're doing. You know, yeah. So there's a lot of magic that happens behind the scenes. And in terms of my relationship with Robin Hood since the show, I'm very happy to have an amazing relationship with that brand, with that company. They hired myself as well as a few other alumni bakers to be the stars of their 2021 commercial campaigns. So I was part of the Dough Bros campaign, which is at the beginning of 2021. And that ran through season 4 of the show. And then most recently, the campaign was called Behind the Bake. So it was sort of like the Inside the Actor's Studio kind of vibe. It was like a roundtable about baking, where myself and two other bakers discussed all things baking and talked about the brands. And it's really cool. They sent me 5 huge bags of flour as a thank you, which was very nice. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I've actually gone through all 5 bags. And I feel like any normal home bakery would take them maybe a couple of years to get through that much flour, but I'm, you know, not your average home baker in terms of frequency.
Not to kind of paint you in a corner in any way, but two questions I have. One is Saturday afternoon, you've got the afternoon free, somehow no work, no commitments, nothing, and you want to bake something for yourself. What do you bake? And then the second one being Sunday, you've got maybe a new neighbor's just moved in, or there's someone you're going to go visit. What do you take them? I'm curious about those two things.
That is such a timely question because I just had a couple friends over, and they are neighbors and they're like new-ish friends, and I'm just obsessed with them. And I had them over for an afternoon tea because why not? Yeah. And I made them, in addition to some other items, I made a custard fruit tart. So pâte sucrée base, crème pâtissière, and then various fruits and jams, and then topped with whipped chantilly cream. So that's sort of my like homey showstopper that I would give to someone that I'm trying to impress. And then in terms of things that I want to make for myself on a regular basis, I mean, unfortunately, I have to watch my waistline and I have to consider my health all the time. So I very rarely bake something just for me because I'm always eating the scraps of everything that I make for everybody else, whether that's an order or like a sponsored social bake, you know. But I can be pretty basic, you know, a nice brown butter chocolate chip cookie really hits the spot. I will often take the trimmings of cakes that I've made and make a trifle for myself. So sort of like a, you know, like a hodgepodge, delicious bowl of things, like a smoothie bowl, but nothing about it is healthy, you know? So yeah, those are a couple things that I churn out on a regular basis.
You asked this question of a chef, typically. They'll often say, and if you know any chefs, they'll often just say, I'll make a grilled cheese. I'll make like, because they'll even before a shift, I remember working in a restaurant, and it was a great restaurant in Tawassan, British Columbia, and they make great, the guys would always cook something so simple. Like they put a chicken thigh on the thing and have some bread and it would just be a chicken sandwich. Like nothing fancy. Because it's almost like the shoemaker's kids. Shoes, right? Or the mechanic's car. You don't often take care of yourself, but you're always serving others. So
yeah. And I remember I used to watch, do you remember that show on TLC, Trading Spaces?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Loved Trading Spaces. Yes. And I remember there was an interview with one of the carpenters and they said, you know, it's so embarrassing when you visit my home because nothing is complete. Because my work is beautifying other people's homes and working on all these custom projects that I don't really think about doing that for myself because that's like my me space. And like, it's always second thought. And I guess that's sort of like that for me. I'm like, you know, I have to tackle on these complicated culinary projects for other people. So for myself, like I'm very happy having like, this is so boring, but like a bowl of Greek yogurt with a little bit of jam in it. Maybe Smucker's jam from a sponsorship. Yeah. but you know, I'm a simple guy at heart.
Yeah. So when you, I caught something you said I order. So do you do baking orders for people? Like kind of like a private thing?
I do custom orders. I function as sort of a secret menu in that I don't have anything posted online. I don't have any menus. I don't have a website. But if someone reaches out to me and the timing is correct, I will absolutely take on custom bake orders. I've done things as like grand as like a wedding cake or like cookies for like a corporate event or something as simple as like someone just wanted a batch of like very specific brownies and I can do that, you know, from time to time. But I've come to I've come to realize over the years since being on the show, like, what I want to do with this baking area of my career. And I think a lot of us alumni from the show, or any reality show, really, we have to figure out, like, what do you want to do with this platform and with this exposure? And, like, what's worth your time? And for me, like, the reason why I'm, like, a secret menu is because I don't want to be in food production, like, mass food production as a career. Whereas the food media area of my life, I'm very happy to, like, feed and water that area of my life.
That's incredible. So I got to ask, when you're baking, and still today, do you ever hear Bruno's voice in your head?
Always. Bruno and Kyla are always in my mind. And, you know, positive and negative.
Yeah.
Because there's, of course, anxiety in being judged by internationally
but
acclaimed
they're quite
bakers
positive
and chefs.
People, though. Like, there's no, there's, what's the judges? Like, Hollywood, right? Like,
there's no
like,
Paul Hollywood.
You know, he can be a little more intense and a little more critical. Whereas I feel like Bruno, I've only maybe once or twice seen him even be slightly neutral or negative ever.
Mm-hmm. They're really positive. And what I like about their feedback and the way that the feedback is edited also, because they provide way more feedback than hits the air.
Because I didn't realize that.
The show is, is with commercials, it's like 45 minutes long, like once you take those commercials out. And each judging can last up to 20 minutes, but you're only going to see like 10 seconds per baker. Yeah, because, you know, it does take 2 days to film every single episode. So there's so many learnings that they imparted on us as competitors
and
bakers.
That's incredible.
It really was. And I felt like they treated their jobs as educators as opposed to just judges. So when they give you feedback, they always give you a tactic to make it better when you do it, if you do it again.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I definitely have them in my ear at all times, either telling me to do things better or remembering feedback that they gave me and little tips and tricks. So, you know, the baking show was like baking boot camp. We all learned so much in a very intense, short amount of time.
Yeah. Bruno was here recently in Cloverdale, Surrey, just outside Vancouver, doing a pop-up patisserie. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that right. And so I went to go, I wanted to go see, I never got to see him because I wanted to like bring him something, like bake a cookie and just have him like, you know, taste it or cut it up and say something. You know, just for fun, because I'm like, I've watched him for so long.
Totally.
Can you do his voice? Can you impersonate?
I think I can. I mean, what would he often say? He'd be like, where is the butter? Or no, what does he says, temperature, he always adds the extra French syllable, or not the extra French syllables, but pronounces things in the way that, you know, French people read things. Or he says, I love the way he says, texture.
Yeah,
it's just, it's a beautiful accent. And a lot of people have asked me if it's real. And it is real. I mean, the man is from France. He's not from Quebec. He's from French.
And it's a high French accent. It's beautiful
exactly.
to listen to.
It really is. Yeah. And my oldest sister, Denise, she does an amazing impression of Kyla. Kyla has a very specific cadence to the way that she gives her feedback.
Yeah.
And it's very, I think Kyla, you know, my season was her first season of the show.
Yeah.
And I, as soon as I met her, as soon as I had a judging with her, I was like, she's made for this show, because the way that she presents is so, it's like she's an Olympic commentator.
Yes.
It's so measured, but also there's enough variety to make it interesting.
Yeah.
And she's just great. She's just made for television. And she's worked in television for years prior to the baking show.
Yeah. And speaking of which, like, I'm trying to actually remember who the host, because there's two hosts. Those that haven't seen it, there's always two judges and two hosts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember who your host, but I also don't really remember who the winners were. Because I'm trying to think of like you think of Kelly Clarkson, right? She won American Idol, right? But then I can't remember what the year was, but I remember different years, you know, since American Idol has happened, where the winner has gone on and maybe done, you know, not very successful, but like the runner-ups have gone on to be quite successful, right? Musicians and professionally. And I feel like with you, I don't actually remember who the winner was from your season, but you have gone on to continue to develop and grow and invest and you know, your brand and your name is out there still. Since the show.
Thank you. I remember, and thank you so much. And I remember Bruno said to us, we had a little bit of like a team bonding meeting after the semifinals, and this wasn't aired because this was private. And we had like 10 minutes with Bruno and Kyla outside the tent for them to give the finalists a little bit of advice and a little bit of a pep talk, which was very needed at that point because we were so tired.
Yeah.
And Bruno said, oh, you know what? This is not correct. This was something that he told me after the show had wrapped.
Okay, okay.
Because I went to Vancouver
November
2019, a couple weeks after
the finale. Does he live here in Vancouver? Is this his hometown?
He lives in BC. I can't remember what... I think he lives in Surrey.
Okay.
I can't remember. I have his home address, but... Yeah. and we went up for a coffee and he said, you know, Colin, he was so forthcoming with advice. It was so amazing. And he said, you know, it's not always the winner who achieves the greatest success after the series. It's sometimes the runner-up. And he gave the example of Megan, who was a runner-up on season 2. And she's gone on to do amazing things. She did the Robin Hood commercials the year after her season. She does custom bakes and has a lot of different clients. And I really took that to heart. And I remember thinking, you know, I really do have an opportunity to make or to carve out another area of my career from the show. And that really helped light a fire under my butt to go after certain opportunities. And I'm so lucky to have done all the things that I've done since 2019.
That's amazing. So, okay, could you make a bake, but then get it to BC? Or you just keep it in the GTA because of you know, time and temperature and travel issues?
Someone asked me, like, would you be able to ship a cake to a different province
A cake would be tricky.
Cake would be so tricky. I think, like, there are certain things, like cookies might travel well.
Okay.
Yeah, something dry would travel
something
well.
Something dry.
Yeah, but right now all my custom orders are all for pickup and they're all within the GTA because of where I'm located. But who knows, maybe someday. And if shipping ever gets, you know, less expensive.
yes. I'm trying to think of my friend Scott who introduced me to the show. I'm like, it'd be so fun to surprise him with like cookies from Colin, right?
Oh,
check it out. No, that's really cool. And for you, kind of like marketing wise, as far as like when you see yourself in the job you have, what do you love about it? Like when you think of your marketing career and what you're doing with Retail Council, maybe share a little bit about that, like your day job.
So my day job, I'm the marketing manager for Retail Council of Canada, and we're a trade association. We represent and advocate on behalf of retailers across Canada, large and small, like any type of retail you can think of. We have a hand in that and we support those businesses. And what's amazing about my job is I do so many things. Yeah. I look at my weekly task list and I'm like, I feel like I'm going to explode, but B, feel so lucky to use so many different types of my skills. So
what do you use to manage that task load? What tool do you
get? Oh my gosh. Right now I'm using Microsoft OneNote.
Yes.
But
yes,
we're
okay.
we're also using Microsoft Planner as a department.
Okay.
Which are all fine. You know, I'm still trying to find the perfect tool for me.
It's kind of like
hard.
It's a horrible saying, but it's kind of like the devil you know, right? Or
yes.
You know, or you know, the worst of all evils, right? Because I like we're on Basecamp too, and if we meet another agency who's like on Asana or someone's on like Rike or Notion, it's kind of like you're a different type of agency, or what works best for your personality too, right? Like, are you a PC or a Mac person?
Exactly. So I'm a little bit of both because for my person right now I'm on a Mac because I'm off the clock right now, but I have a PC for work and I've always been a PC person, but I just recently made the shift over to Mac. The only thing about Mac is like they always want to talk to their other devices.
Yes. Yes.
And I am an Android user for my mobile.
Wow. Okay.
And I used to have an iPad, a really old iPad. So I'm just like a huge hodgepodge. I'm tech savvy to a point.
Yes.
But I'm not tech streamlined, I would say. In terms of like I do so many things at work. I'm trying to think of like all the things that I did this week, like social media campaigns, paid advertising. You know, we do a ton of email marketing.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You know, like it really runs the gamut. We do so many things at RCC. And what I love about my job is, again, I get to do so many different things, but above all, I get to be creative.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've always, you know, it's always been really important to me to use my creativity. Yeah. I have a background in the arts, the visual arts, as well as performing arts.
Yes.
And I think like, you know, if I was in a job where I couldn't be creative at all, I would feel really dead inside. So I'm really lucky to use creativity in all areas of my life and career.
So quick snippet, and I don't need to go deep into this, but like what's the hot take on the future of retail for Canada?
The future of retail, you know, it's so funny. Like the future of retail it's like yesterday.
Yeah.
Because it's always changing.
Yes.
I think something that we keep hearing about, and this isn't going to be groundbreaking or new, but personalization is only going to get more sophisticated and therefore, in my opinion, more creepy.
Yeah.
because sometimes it feels like I'll just think of a product and not even say it out loud. And then all of a sudden on my Instagram, I see an ad for it. It's just amazing. The sophistication of data collection and personalization. And obviously there are privacy, you know, issues to account for and consider, but you know, personalization, it makes for convenient shopping. And I think successful retailers are going to really lean into that.
Yeah.
I also think, and this goes for marketing any types of products, whether it's retail or service, influencers. Influencer marketing has really evolved to the point where it's not just about engaging an influencer who has the most followers.
Yeah.
I find, and especially now, like I am technically like a micro influencer in the culinary space.
Yeah.
And brands are really trying to cultivate relationships with influencers that feel authentic, that don't just get them the impressions and get them the eyeballs on their products, but get them the right audience and the right customers to build loyalty. So yeah, it's all just about getting into those niches.
Let me argue this back. I'm going to flip this on you. I'm going to say, so you're talking about being an influencer and it's their audience, but how would you argue if someone's trying to figure out, okay, I want Colin, I want to engage Colin, and I'm going to use you as an example, so this is perfect because I'm going to get personal here. And I want Colin to, I have this, it can't be flour, but I've got this bakeware. I've got bakeware. Mm-hmm. I want Colin to use my bakeware. But it's like, I'm not as interested because I'm trying to figure out pricing and what to pay you. Mm-hmm. But it's like, well, I also have a quote in from a videographer and a photographer. But it's like, and let's say it's for $10,000 for a videographer, mm-hmm. photographer to shoot on my bakeware. But then you come back and said, hey, for $10,000, you're going to get these reels, you know, this TikTok, this video. But you're paying for the actor, which is me, the voice talent. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write it and it's going to come from me. And I just so happen to have this great following. So basically you're paying me to create something. And I feel like there's a change almost from influencer to creator because you are a form of videographer, but you're like all in. Because I'm watching that show. And are you seeing that now? Like as both a creator and an influencer who is, you know, how do you, what do you call yourself? Do you say you're Mike?
That is so interesting because I engaged with a brand last year.
Yeah.
And it was that exact situation.
Okay.
It's so funny that you brought up those examples because I worked with a brand and we needed to come up with these culinary videos. And I was the one writing the script, testing the recipes, baking the beauties, doing my at-home set.
Yeah.
The only things that I didn't have to do, literally the only things I didn't have to do, were setting up the camera and doing the audio. Everything else was myself. You know, again, script writing, on-screen presentation.
Yeah.
You know, things that we might not think about. Makeup and hair and wardrobe.
And then did you publish it as dressing. Well? Were you also a publisher and syndicator?
Because exactly.
Syndicated on your personal channels.
Yeah, and I think brands, they really have to think about, you know, these influencers or these content creators, I guess that's sort of a better title for me, a content creator, they're doing so much and they're making it really easy for brands. And I think a successful like content creator partnership with a brand is, you know, allowing the content creators or the influencers to inhabit their own style so that it really is authentic.
Yes.
And don't give them too many restrictions, you know, like you've created this relationship for a reason.
Yep.
Let the influencer be themselves and then you'll be able to create more authentic content.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And if you could speak to those in retail right now, as far as like, hey, here's some like, you know, trends you're seeing for the year, something that you're watching, what's your advice? What would you say?
And this is like, so it's a bit of a Debbie Downer, but you know, every brand, retail or not retail, we have to be really, really clear about our health and safety measures and how we're keeping our staff and our team and our customers safe. Yeah. I think we're also seeing, you know, a greater commitment to diversity and inclusion. You know, not just slapping on a Lunar New Year promotion on a new brand of shirt or a new line of skincare products, you know, really being transparent about how diverse is your team? How cognizant of racial bias is your training for your staff? You know, just being a totally transparent business and doing all the right things and letting everybody know that that's what you're doing. And that goes for any type of business, retail or not.
Okay, so someone once reached out to me from a marketing association and said, hey, we want to mentor Indigenous youth. This was after 2015, and they're like, it'd be amazing. We thought, Darren, you're Indigenous, you might know, how do we find Indigenous youth to mentor? And I was like, oh, I could, you know, I know some places I could find. And I said, by the way, do you have any Indigenous mentors? Have you found it? And they said, no. There's no one Indigenous in marketing, like at the level of mentor level. And I was like, well, I think there is. So I was challenged and I said, okay, put a pin in it. I'm going to go find them. And I went and found, but at the same time, I was like, yeah, I found them, but it was very hard to find them. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot. So I'm trying to go, what would you say is, you know, trying to grow that and nurture that? How do we see more Indigenous people of color, Black people in marketing and in this industry? What would you say is, do you know the answer here?
I don't know. The thing is, I guess I do know the answer. Good. They are out there.
Come on.
They are out there, but we do have to work to get there, to get them to inhabit the seat at the table. And I had this conversation with someone in HR, and we were just talking about diverse hiring and diverse casting. And some people say, you know, well, sometimes we're finding the BIPOC talent, but they're not exactly right for this role. And, you know, if we have to choose between picking someone who's right for this role and picking someone from a BIPOC community or BIPOC identity, you know, we have to pick who's right for the role. And I said, you know, if we continue thinking that way, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of BIPOC people like us never seeing ourselves in executive positions and never seeing ourselves in positions of power and role model positions. So if you really care about and believe in diversity in hiring and spreading the wealth, if you will, the talent is out there. You just have to work a little bit harder to find it sometimes.
Yeah, no, that's so good. And I have some empathy for this woman who called, because I was like, I really, and when I asked her a bit more, she's like, she didn't have any friends that weren't, that you know, all of her friends were white and mm-hmm. all of her coworkers were white. And so in her circles, and then I said, and you know, I kind of, you know, I called back and I said, I found some folks, and she was explaining how like the board, the leadership meeting were all white and all of their peers were white. And then even that same year was the same year when I was like, hey, we want to do a fun little award show. And then we investigated what kind of marketing award show were in Canada. And we realized every single award show in Canada and a few even big ones in America were only all white juries. And almost over 80% male juries. Yeah. And I was shocked. And so we put together a jury member. But the saddest but exciting part was like we had the first marketing award show jury that had non-white jury members. And I was like, why is that a thing?
Yeah. And, you know, I think I mean, there are many reasons as to why these
panels... Is our industry racist, Colin?
Yeah. Well, you know what's sad? I think every single industry is racist. I really do. And that goes for marketing, goes for retail.
I thought we were safe,
culinary.
Though. I thought we were like and creative. I thought that, like, growing, you know, seriously, until a couple years ago, I was so naive and just thought, oh man, we're super like, embrace everyone, colorful, rainbows, like... But no.
But then we encounter red tape, and then we encounter people who are not as forward thinking as you or I am potentially. But, you know, I think every industry, there is systemic racism in every single industry, and it's up to us and it's up to leaders to uncover that and make the changes. And if you, you know, sometimes those changes have to be drastic. If you have an all white panel for an event or an all white judging panel for an awards program, like if you see that, you got to change it because you know, it's not good.
No.
And
no.
You know, how can any awards program or how can any speaker event be legitimate if we don't have diverse voices, you know, saying their bit?
Yeah.
Because then it's just a bunch of the same types of people talking to each other.
Yeah.
And or talking to diverse audiences and establishing the status quo. When really, like, you know, there was no one like, for example, like, there was no one like me, you know, inhabiting a similar role as I have on stage or on television. Yeah. So, like, you know, it's all about building role models.
Yeah.
Also, you know, letting people see themselves so that they feel comfortable pursuing certain dreams or pursuing certain jobs and industries.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's something that we could talk about for hours and hours and hours, but...
No.
There's no one solution. We just all have to do... You just all have to do better every single day.
I found a new love, Colin. I will admit this on this show.
Okay.
It's about landscape artists. It's
okay.
The best. It's the BBC has the best landscape artists of the year. It's incredible. So think great, you know, the Great British Baking Show, but landscape artists. I remember watching it because it's very relaxing. It's very soothing.
Totally.
Like tea drinking, painting. It's beautiful. So I think you'd love it. But then I remember watching and they, again, I was like, oh, it's going to be only white painters. It's the UK. It's British. But they did the work. And I think that's the thing is like they did the work and I think they got uncomfortable. Like they chose to find people. And I think that's where... Like even now, like looking in positions of leadership and people joining boards or people becoming you know, advisory board members or you know, paid board members, it's like will existing pre-existing power structures do the work and get uncomfortable, right? I love Miss Frizzle. She has this amazing school bus. It's magical, and she would always say, "Get messy, make mistakes, and have fun." And I think there's so much fun when you can have those voices there.
Yeah. And we are going to make mistakes and that's okay.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
But the point is, if you're making mistakes while doing the work to get to the proper goal, then that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
And speaking of like, you know, diverse casting, I remember hearing unfortunate rumblings once the cast of The Baking Show had been announced every single season because CBC and Proper Television, who produced the show, I think they do a good job, especially year after year, finding a diverse group of Canadians to compete on the show.
Yes.
And I think I saw some chatter online, which was really horrible, saying, you know, oh, I guess to get on the show, you have to be A, B, or C.
Really?
And they listed a bunch of, you know, we'll call it like minority status identities and things like that, saying but I'm like, you know what? Perhaps the people who are applying for the show are, you know, the majority, let's say 90% of the applicants are white.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that 90% of the people who are on the show should be white. You know, it's a television show. We have to represent Canada.
But it does represent our, I feel like it represents it so well. Like if you look at the population's, you know, numbers and that, it's incredible how they've done a great job. Like even, and I will say, okay, the recent season, and I'm trying to figure out like, how do you even say this? They had someone on the show, which I remember saying, when I was thinking like, this is amazing. Cause I feel like it's, I don't know if it's a person group, but it's someone who was just like beautifully done up, like just over the top, you know, like
I know who you're talking about.
Yes. But I was like, I was like, that's really cool. Cause people who like really like to dress up and really like to be done up, they want to see themselves on TV. And the show typically has never had people that were really like made for TV people, like models. She was a very model-like looking person. And I was like, that's amazing they even included models.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Very like, true. Yeah, you know, Canada is a real mosaic. We've got a lot of different quote-unquote types of people and reality shows and speaker panels and judging panels. We need to reflect that. I really, you know, if we don't see ourselves, then we won't participate.
Yes, yes, come on. That's a great line. Say that again, Colin.
If we don't see ourselves, we won't participate. And that is something that has affected my life pretty deeply. I'm like, you know, I remember thinking like, oh, maybe I'll go after this career. Oh, wait, I've never seen anyone like me or who sounds like me do that. So maybe I won't. So for example, like throughout university, I did a lot of theater. And I'd like to say that I'm like a, not failed actor, but a retired actor, I guess.
Yeah, that works. You and Drake. Like Drake, also retired actor, right? I don't know if people know this. He was he was in Degrassi High, played a guy in a wheelchair, and I feel like that's really his claim to fame. He's gone on to do some music stuff, but he's a retired actor.
Exactly. Yeah. And I remember thinking when I was in university, I'm like, you know, I could really go after this actor thing. I could really go out on all those musical theater auditions. And then I remember thinking, wait a minute, what are the stage shows that I could do? Okay, let's count them on one hand. Miss Saigon, Rent, The King and I, maybe The Lion King. And that's
And Kim's
it.
Convenience if they're really like, they really were willing to stretch it.
Right, yeah. And then in terms of television, there was, you know, in the 90s and the early 2000s, like there was usually like one Asian friend.
Yeah.
There weren't a lot of queer people on television. No. You know, it's not a diverse space. And so I remember making an active decision to not pursue that career. Which is honestly truly fine because I did eventually find my way acting anyway. And I've done a lot of cool things that I'm very grateful for. But it's just sad to think of like a young person being discouraged because there's been no precedent set for them in terms of someone who's like them. So and that's why, again, we got to do the work, get diverse people in executive roles or in decision-making roles because that's how we can actually progress.
It's amazing. And give youngsters, the youth northern stars to look to.
Yeah.
Right? And I think even you know, you working in marketing, like it's for people to know that, hey, you know, I could work in marketing one day or I could have that job one day and this person looks like me or I've been taught by, I had an instructor or a professor who looked like me. Like I could do that.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, I love those. You know, I think some people criticize awards shows because they're like, oh, yeah, it's a pay to play or it's like it's just for show or it's some brand. But I'm like, hey, man, the more awards show, the better. Like if we can highlight more incredible people that could be celebrated, highlighted, promoted, then, hey, more power to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think I remember hearing it was one of my best friends and he said it was a talk show talking about what people were wearing at a recent award show, whether it was the Oscars or the Golden Globes or something. And he said, it was a little bit cringy because it felt like every person on the panel was trying to one-up the other person by saying, well, this person's wearing a black designer. Oh, well, this person's wearing an indigenous designer. Oh, well, this person is wearing an indigenous and queer designer. And it felt a little too on the nose. And I said, you know what? Whether it's on the nose or not, at least those people are getting recognized and mentioned on television. And that translates to dollar bills, you know, and support for BIPOC businesses. Yeah. So I don't think it's a bad thing, even if it is blatantly obvious that we are, you know, talking about diversity wherever we go. That's the only way that we're going to move forward, like I said before.
I did a panel of like indigenous people in marketing, just said, I want to try this. I found you. I'm going to put you on a panel. We recorded. It was amazing. And I asked them this question. I said, hey, have you ever seen yourself in marketing? And most of them described this pain medicine with like a guy with a big headdress on. And that was the only time or someone.
Yes. Oh my God. I know the one. Yeah.
Yeah. Or government propaganda, like like government instruction and stuff. Although this one female, Deanna on the panel said, you know what? I actually remember a few years ago, Sephora highlighted this incredible indigenous advocate and they had a big poster in the store and it was so amazing. It so inspired me. It was incredible. And then, so Sephora, this is pre-BLM, before all the acronyms came out. And so, but then Sephora puts out this incredible video this last year and hired indigenous voices, talent, writers, videographers, even editors, everything. But then when it went public, it was beautiful and gorgeous. But then they got criticized because they forgot to include Afro-Indigenous people. And so then they were, pressured because of the cancel culture to send a big apology out. And but I was like, they're trying. I'm like, they're trying so hard. And I'm like, I love that Sephora, even before it was a thing, was doing something. And then they tried to do something so amazing. So Sephora team, if you're listening, incredible job. You know, haters always going to hate. So
Yeah. Like I said, we're always going to make mistakes when we're trying something new. And, you know, as long as we learn from them, you know, we're still doing good work.
No, 100%. So do you still watch the show? Are you still a fan? Do you watch
it? A huge fan. Yeah, okay. Of course. I was doing an Instagram live show to do like a review and recap with Mariam Siddiqui from the Globe and Mail. And we did a weekly recap of the show on Tuesdays on Instagram. We got it sponsored, which was very exciting. But, you know, I feel like it's just part of who I am for now and forever. Because it really has changed my life in so many unexpected ways. I love the show. And we have a really big community of the alumni from the show. We have a big WhatsApp thread with pretty much every single baker from the show. Yeah. It's chaos because we've had five seasons now. So it's about 50 people on a WhatsApp thread. So sometimes I'll get 129 notifications. Yeah. But, you know, it's cool. Like, I got to meet people from all across Canada, from different walks of life, different ages. You know, it's pretty amazing what the show does. And and any reality show will do that.
Yeah.
I'm just lucky that The Great Canadian Baking Show is so lovely.
Yeah.
Because I think if we were on something like, I don't know, I'm just going to say like MasterChef or Survivor, where there's a cash prize at the end.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, that attracts different types of competitors.
Yes. Yeah. Like you sacrifice 6-7 weeks of work for a glass plate. The attempt for a glass plate.
Exactly.
Literally. Yeah. Like it's beautiful. It's beautiful in that. And it's so pure in that sense. And amazing in that way. So I'm glad that the show is still going. I'm glad that you had a great experience during and after. And it's incredible the way that I've even just been watching you grow in other areas. And as you grow your creator side of things, you know, or influencer side of things and what that looks like.
So. Yeah, it's a really cool and unexpected journey that I've been on. And like, I'm so grateful again for all the opportunities that I've been given. And I'm so happy that the show is still on. I think it's now a Canadian classic.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's here to stay.
They did a Christmas special. I watched
this.
Yeah, yeah. They invited folks back. Yeah.
Yeah, I was on it, and it was ridiculous. And actually, I was lucky to be on both Christmas specials, because the one after the end of my season, they brought me back as like a surprise singer at the end, which was really fun. And then the holiday special this year, or I guess this past December, I was one of the competitors. So clearly, I liked it enough to go back, you know. And I think it's a true television classic now.
Yeah. No, it's my family's favorite. We love it together. It's a great, there's not a lot of shows you can watch as a family. Which I think it's sad. Like what we used to love to watch as a family actually was the Great Canadian Race. That was Amazing Race Canada. We loved it. We loved it. And now we've got the British Baking Show, and then now the Landscape Show, which we love, and we'll actually draw during it when we do the Landscape Show.
That's cool.
Or the Baking Show, we'll sometimes even come up with baking ideas afterwards and try things. And it's so cool.
I love that. Yeah, I've been approached by random children on the street.
Yes.
And bizarre.
If my kids saw you, they would know you. They would be like, that is a celebrity. He is a TV star.
That delights me and surprises me, because I never imagined a young person watching this show. And then I think, you know what? It's really family friendly. Oh. It's creative. It's fun to watch. Who doesn't love dessert? Who doesn't love bread?
You kind of cheer for your person.
Yeah.
Which is so neat, right? And so, and again, little secret. I don't think I said this in the email ahead of time, but I'm like, you are our family's favorite. Like, you are who we cheer
thank
for.
You.
Which I was so cool. So, nice. So I was like, because I think what it was, what I like about the show too, and it's in that it is a Canadian classic. I like that you said that, because people were kind. Like it was all about kindness. Like even I loved the moments when people would bake or finish early and they go and help people, right? And
yes.
And that honestly sounds weird, but that's one of my favorite moments.
Because I'm like, totally.
Yeah. And you've been there. You were there, right?
When I have been there, and like we've helped each other. And I remember my sister asked, like, well, isn't that kind of unfair? Because you're like, if someone's helping you, like it's their work too. And I remember saying, who cares?
Yeah.
We're competing for a plate. Who cares? Who cares if someone else helped pipe this buttercream?
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Yeah. It's just nice.
Yeah. Okay. So question, guys, a practical question. Where does the food go after? Because I've seen eat them bits and pieces. And I've seen like Bruno joking about, well, I'm going to eat two of those. And someone saying, oh, I can't believe he, like, they talk about how what got eaten by the judges.
Yeah.
But does it go to cast and crew type of thing? Or?
So on my, I know it's different for every season because of COVID restrictions. Oh, yeah, but on my season, they would save one portion of every single thing for the bakers. So we could all taste each other's creations.
Which is so cool.
Yeah, once the cameras are cut. But then the rest of it goes to the crew, it goes to production, and it goes to the hosts and judges.
Yeah.
I remember one day, it was after Bread Week, after our technical, and I saw Carolyn and Aurora, who were the hosts on my season.
And they're from Baroness Von Sketch, right?
Yes, they're from Baroness Von Sketch.
Which I love that. Okay, them. That show's done, right? It doesn't...
It is done. They finished their... I think it was five seasons, but it's over.
I love that show.
Man, me too.
One of the best Canadian social classics. Commentaries. Like, some of the episodes were so serious. Like, the one in the police building, right? About, very serious topic. And the one on Indigenous acknowledgments, it was incredible.
Oh my God, I loved that skit because, you know, and I have a theater background, and literally just before lockdown, I was in a play at Buddies in Bad Times Theater in Toronto, and we had a full half day where we discussed our land acknowledgement because it was, you know, it's really tricky. Yeah. And you have to strike the right tone. You have to say the right things also. Yeah. But it also has to exist within this theater entertainment space.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just, it's interesting. And I really think the theater community and the entertainment community is at the forefront of that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're the ones, we don't get land acknowledgements when we go to the movies.
No.
And why not?
Yeah.
So anyway, there's no land acknowledgements when I go to the mall.
No. No, it's so, no.
It's bizarre.
Alumni, like the, do you feel part of also like the greater CBC family alumni as well on top of the show alumni?
I guess so. I hadn't really thought of that, but I guess I am part of it. Yeah. You know what? Every time over the holidays, every time the CBC would like post a meme about me specifically from the holiday special, I was like, oh yeah, I guess I'm part of the CBC family now. That's pretty cool. I mean, you know, I haven't been invited to be on any other CBC shows just yet, but fingers crossed, maybe the day will come.
I shared with my children recently the Log Riders Waltz, which is a CBC little, they used to do these micro cartoons and it's about the log riders. And so I'm like, there are some CBC things like that, like classics I grew up with. It's fun to think that when they're older, they might show their kids, here's the great Canadian baking show I watched.
It's so true. I have a little niece.
Yeah.
She's just over 2.5. And she watched the holiday special with myself and my sister and my friends. And to her, my name is Tito C. Nice. And I remember we'd be like, her name's Paloma. Paloma, like, who's that on television? She's like, Tito C.
Yeah.
And she looked like delighted, but mostly confused.
Yeah.
She was like, but why are you up there? You're here. And like, what's happening? Yeah. So I'm curious to know. I'm sure we'll show her my season when she's a little bit older and she'll be like, whoa, my uncle was on this random competitive reality show. That is very random and very cool. Hopefully she thinks it's cool.
Yeah. So I'm gonna close with this question because I'm really curious about this. Was it encouraged or was it initiated by you to incorporate so much of your culture into your bakes?
It was never explicitly encouraged. Okay. I just knew that it's something that I wanted to do. I thought that's a way that I can differentiate myself in an authentic way that nobody else would be able to. I was the only Filipino, I think I am the only Filipino competitor in the entire series, if I'm not mistaken. I think.
To date.
To date, I believe so. I'd have to go back and check. I'm pretty sure.
But you did these micro-education moments. Like, I love that about you. I think that was part of them that endeared me to you was, okay, it's like, there's certain shows, reality shows, where people try to, like, show off their personality. Like, I'm going to be loud, I'm going to be colorful. But it was like, you were colorful and loud, and I loved it. And you sang, and you were this, like, great person with a entertainment background, but you also like got told about the story about your family and your culture, and you took it really seriously, and you did it in such a caring way. I thought it was so touching.
Oh, thank you. I remember I remember crying during International Week because they said, like, this was during those interviews outside, and they asked me something like, what does it mean to you to make something from your culture? And I remember I started crying because it really felt really surreal to be able to do that on a national show. And I remember thinking, like, it is complicated being a third culture kid.
Yeah.
You know, I have parents who were born in the Philippines. They immigrated to Canada. I was born in Canada. I don't speak any Filipino dialect myself. I can be seen as not Filipino enough. I could seen as not Canadian enough. And so it's very emotional to put yourself out there and to engage with your culture in a meaningful way, especially in a public way.
Yeah. And very public.
You know, very public. And I'm sure there are a lot of Filipino people who were like, that's not a real ube cake or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was really important to me. And I remember thinking, like, if this is the only thing I do on the show, I'll be really proud.
Yeah. I was really moved by that. And I just thought, and I think, again, part of the reason I want to watch it with my kids is like, it's a great show. It's very soothing, very relaxing, but also those educational moments of like, this is Canada. Look at our diverse quilt of our nation, right?
Yeah,
not every cake's going to look the same. It's not going to taste the same. It's going to be like new recipes and new ingredients even. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember especially, I think Chris and I were usually presenting the judges with something that they hadn't had before from a culture and cuisine that they weren't familiar with. And like, that is cool. And that goes to show an internationally acclaimed chef can still be surprised and can still be educated about something new because, you know, we know what we know and there's so much that we don't know.
Yeah.
And we have to be open to learning.
That's awesome. Colin, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a huge highlight of my year so far. Happy 2022.
We're 2022.
Here. Can you believe it?
we made it. Okay, someone said the other week, 2022 owes us. This year owes us. And I was like, it's a bit, what's the term, like entitled. But also I was like, he's like, last couple years weren't so great. So I think they owe us this year. And I was like, all right, that's a neat attitude.
I mean, I think 2022 does owe us, and I don't know if it's going to deliver,
but
we'll see. I mean, you and I are alive and healthy, so
yes,
that's a plus, and that's all I can wish for anybody else listening, and we just got to keep on keeping on.
And if you are in certain circles in the GTA area, and you are kind and loving to someone, and you know, very encouraging, they may be so motivated to seek out Chef Colin to acquire what his latest secret menu is and maybe send you some beautiful baked goods.
This is
so
true.
You can only hope. That gives you hope for that's for
true.
The future. Yes.
That's what we got to focus on. As marketers and humans and Canadians, we just got to focus on hope because, you know, things can always get better and things could always be worse.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Well, thank you again, Colin. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been amazing.
Thank you for joining us this week on Marketing News Canada, and we'll see you next time on the show.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and The Podfather.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.